Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
By now you know, or should certainly know, is new each and every Thursday. Podcast1.com, Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for checking it out, subscribing, listening, streaming, and welcome to our newest outlet for this podcast, and that would be Spotify. You do not need to be a subscriber to Spotify, apparently, to hear the podcast. It remains free there as well. So multiple ways to access, and thank you for doing so and listening each and every week. As I'm coming to you on this Thursday, having just gotten off the Monsters of Rock cruise, I'd love to tell you how it is, but in full disclosure, I'm recording this open prior to boarding the cruise. So I could make it up and tell you all about it, having not done it yet at the time you're hearing this, but I don't like to operate in smoke and mirrors. So all I can tell you is it was probably pretty good, because it's good every year, and this is the 10th one that just happened, and I'm honored to host it every year, and I'll tell you all about it on next week's podcast. But because I was going to be at sea most of this week, I obviously had to record this open for you prior to getting on the ship, but in the timeline of things, I'll have just gotten off of it on this post day of Thursday, if that is the day you are indeed listening. So hope everybody had a great week, and we will get to our interview, which is coming up here in a matter of minutes. And it is an interview with a supergroup of sorts that, like all of my interviews here on this podcast, originated on my Sirius XM show, Trunk Nation, heard on Volume Channel 106 each and every day, live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, replaying 10 to midnight Eastern, and anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the world of rock. There's a lot of concerts, a lot of things being announced all the time, and we cover it, and I cover it daily on Trunk Nation, and talk about it with you live and bring you guests and news and all that stuff. If you're in the U.S. and Canada, I certainly hope you are joining me on Volume each and every day. And if you're not, please become a subscriber and do so. Outside of the U.S. and Canada, well, of course, Sirius XM is not available. So good to give you a little taste of what I'm doing on a daily basis on my radio show here on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Remember, you can always connect with me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, where I am most active, Instagram, fan page on Facebook, eddietrunk.com, the official online home. Now, I'm just getting off the cruise, probably around the time you're hearing this, flying back to New Jersey from Florida, but I will not be home for long because I'm getting ready to head to the West Coast and getting ready to spend some time in both LA and Tulsa, kind of an LA trip with Tulsa in the middle of it. I'll start in Los Angeles the 18th and the 19th and the 20th. The 20th, I'll host the Dio Cancer Fund latest event at Avalon in L.A., remembering Ronnie James Dio 10 years after his passing. And then I'll head over to Tulsa, where I will host Buck Cherry at the IDL Ballroom on the 22nd of February, and then go back to L.A. and get ready for the next Trunk Nation L.A. Invasion, which is my monthly broadcast from the patio of the Rainbow Bar and Grill. And the next one is February 25th. The usual deal, if you're in Southern California, totally free to attend. Doesn't cost you a penny, no list, no ticket needed. Just come on down, and I'll be there on the patio 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time on the 25th. That's a Tuesday night. My guest, one of them, has been announced as Alter Bridge, who are playing in L.A. the previous night. Miles Kennedy, Mark Tremonti from Alter Bridge on the set, on the show, on the stage, on the patio with me at the Rainbow on the 25th. We'll have a second guest as well to be announced when we get a little bit closer. Hope to see everybody. And of course, you can, if you're outside of LA, you can hear all the action live as it happens. Just tune into Volume, Channel 106, 7 to 9 Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern on the 25th. And if you can't listen that late or you are unable to listen in that window, the good news is audio and video of the show go on demand on the SiriusXM app. And the following day, the entire show rebroadcasts in the usual 2 to 4 Eastern live window. So another way for you to hear the show if you miss it on what is normally our replay window. That's the time that we go live when we work from the Rainbow and do that monthly show. Looking forward to spending some time with Miles and Mark. Huge fan of Alter Bridge. Good friends, both of them. And also looking forward to seeing them play the night before at the Wiltern on the 24th, which should be awesome as they continue their tour in support of their latest album, Walk the Sky. So busy February schedule as usual, and that's what's going on. Our interview, as I mentioned, happened in the LA studios of SiriusXM a few weeks ago, and it's with all five members of the band Sons of Apollo, which features, if you are unfamiliar with that lineup and who that band is, that would be Billy Sheehan on bass, Bumblefoot on guitar, Derek Sherinian on keys, Mike Portnoy on drums, and Jeff Scott Soto on vocals. Now, of course, Portnoy was on this radio show, or I'm sorry, this podcast a week or two ago to talk about and celebrate Neil Peart. A few weeks ago, if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you know that I played for you over the course of two podcasts, my interviews with artists celebrating and remembering Neil Peart, one of them being Mike Portnoy. The interview that day with Portnoy was originally supposed to be about Sons of Apollo, and then the tragic, sad news came about Neil's passing. So obviously we spent the time together talking about and remembering Neil Peart. And the good news was that about a week and a half later, it turned out that both Mike and I were in L.A. at the same time. So I was able to not only get him, but the other four members of Sons of Apollo all in the studio together to talk about their new album, 2020, which is now out and released. So this is a lot of fun. All five guys, a busy, busy, full room. You'll hear from all of them through the course of the conversation. And that is what I have for you on this week's podcast. So you know the social media by now. I just mentioned it. Make sure you keep up with all the stuff going on. And let's get to it without further ado. Coming up right after this, Sons of Apollo, who are currently out on tour in studio on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, if you are a Survivor fan, then you got to check out Rob Has a Podcast, hosted by Survivor competitor Rob Cesternino. Every week he'll be recapping the upcoming season of Survivor so you don't miss any of the action. Plus, Rob is celebrating his 10th year of podcasting, so you know he's a total pro. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Podcast One, and many of your favorite podcast listening apps.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, the Eddie Trunk Podcast is up and running for another week. As I mentioned, my guests are the members of Sons of Apollo, all five members of the band. This took place in my SiriusXM studio when I was in L.A. last month, talking about the band's new album, 2020, and much more. Again, Sons of Apollo are Billy Sheehan, Mike Portnoy, Derek Sherinian, and Jeff Scott Soto, and Bumblefoot. All good friends. A good time here for sure. I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. Glad to be able to bring it to you now on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Let me go around the horn.
It's really starting, nice looking mic.
Let me go around the horn, starting from my left, my good buddy, Mr. Mike Portnoy.
Great googly moogly.
Who's wearing his current beard color is a shade of teal. Would that accurate?
I don't know.
It's about a teal.
It goes through all different shades throughout the week.
Do you change colors depending upon what band you're playing with? You know, like Kiss had the four colors of the solo records?
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm in flying colors, it's orange. When I'm in suns, it's teal.
No, it's like a rainbow. It's like a chameleon, like whatever the walls are. Yeah, it's like it changes to that color.
It does match the wall, Bubble. Yeah.
It was purple in the other room.
Next to him on the keyboards, the great Derek Sherinian. Good to see you.
Always great seeing you, Ed.
You too, man. And straight ahead, he says he has a major announcement on this show.
I do.
Bumblefoot, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. Bumble, would you like... Let me introduce everybody else, and we'll go right to you for your big breaking news.
I don't even know what it is.
No, he said
it's really not that
in the
big.
Room.
I'm just screwing you.
He's leaving the band before the tour starts.
I already did that.
He's going to go play drums in Aerosmith.
Oh, dude.
We're going to get there. Hold on. Jeff Scott Soto over here.
I am a Viking!
The other day, myself, Mike, and Jeff were watching football at Richie Kotzen's house. Mike Piazza calls me.
That was awesome.
I hand him the phone, and you guys took turns singing I Am a Viking, and I'll See the Light Tonight over the telephone.
That sounds like better than I do these days, singing that song.
My text tone from Jeff is the opening, from I'll See the Light Tonight.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Remember that party we went to at Sebastian Bach's, too?
Oh, my God.
And the whole time he's singing I Am a Viking to you an inch from your face? Classic.
How romantic. Splattering my face with saliva.
Classic. And on the last, but who's certainly saliva? Not least, on the bass, and a lot of times the double neck bass in this band, Mr. Billy Sheehan.
My chiropractor loves that bass.
Yeah, does that thing weigh a ton or
it
what?
It does. It weighs a ton.
Now, I noticed in one of the videos you're actually just playing a single neck.
Yeah, that's an extra long scale. It's got the low note, but we don't want to bother with those details. But kind of does the same thing.
Billy and Bumblefoot have the double necks. I have the double chin.
Which is the reason you got the beard.
Exactly.
Yeah. Beat me to it.
It's a good idea. It's a cloaking device. I need to grow one of those. Bumble's got an interesting... Bumble, your chin...
My chin.
Your chin beard
chin
is always interesting. Yeah. That's a good length for you. It's
that's what she said. I was waiting for that.
What's the big announcement? You said you had an announcement to make.
Well, not really. I just wanted to tell you about all you guys. I wanted to share something that's very close to my heart, something very special that I've been involved with for a while. Now, I think you will all appreciate this as we all travel a lot.
Billy's getting nervous. I can see him like twitching.
No, yeah. No, it's really not a big deal. But you know how we basically live in hotel rooms a lot of the time? Mm. And how very often the triangle on the toilet paper, the way it's folded, is not always a very good triangle.
I feel like this is a Shark Tank moment. Like he's got a product.
No, but
he's got a hexagon shape.
What happened was, you know,
OCD.
I would take pictures of the triangles and just like send them to friends and family and just like, can you believe this effing S? You know, it was like the
you can
point
say
doesn't
all
even...
that, by the way. You can say fucking shit.
Okay,
it's a new coffee table book.
Well, I write effing S.
Okay,
and
Evanescence. Yes. There you go. So, you know, and then they would send me pictures. And finally, I realized that I just felt like I had this civil, moral, ethical duty to kind of just bring this into the world light. So everybody listening or watching, I'd like you to take out your laptops or your phones, and I want you to type in tpfail.com.
TPFail, F-A-I-L.
Yes. And what I did is I started a website that exposes all the the toilet paper triangles around.
Thank goodness somebody's on the case.
So basically what I do is I take a picture of the triangle. I point out what is good, what is bad, and I give it a rating.
Wow.
And I have...
How many do you have up there right now?
About 12. Not a lot.
TPFail.com.
Yeah, actually I started this... last year, but I've just Kept it to myself.
When you're talking, at home, you're at home, does the toilet paper go above or below? Like over the top or under the bottom?
It should never go under the bottom.
I like it under the bottom.
No.
Yeah, I do too. I always over the top. No,
it must be over the top.
You're a fucking monster.
No, Ron.
I thought we lived in a civilized country.
Now, Ron, are you talking about like where they fold it, but then there's like a little sticker? Like if you go into the higher-end hotels, the triangle has a sticker.
As long as the edges have a very fine edge, there's no...
are you looking for symmetry or the fold?
There has to be symmetry. There can't be. It can't go.
Okay, guys,
the
thanks
wall.
For coming in.
Yeah, I was going to say, how long do you have? Is it the fine point? And
forget about that new record.
For the love of
fucking
tour.
God, for the love of fucking God, you should never see any underfold.
Hold on.
But please, go to tpfed.com.
I just did. We just got
it
on the phone.
It's a beautiful website. I made it myself.
This is the headline. This website is for exposing poorly folded toilet paper triangles in hotel rooms. this is real.
Yeah.
And
I tried to make it look like one of those old, like 1996 Angel Fire websites.
Too much time on my hands.
Yeah. 16-hour flights, things like that.
Jesus.
And I'm very quick with HTML. So,
all right. Yeah.
So let me ask you guys this before we talk some Sons of Apollo. We were talking about this before we got on the air. Big news, just as we started today, that Joey Kramer is actually suing the other guys in Aerosmith because they're not allowing him.
I think it's ridiculous.
To play.
Ridiculous.
So
where's
what,
the loyalty?
So. And Billy, you brought up a good point. You guys had an issue like this with Mr. Big, with Pat Torpey, because
we certainly did.
He was dealing with Parkinson's. And,
yes.
And the way you handled it was including him.
Yeah, we had
talk
him.
About that.
Yeah, we had him on tour. He could play maybe a couple songs. And so we brought another drummer along, Matt Starr, to play do the heavy lifting in the set. But Pat could still sing, and so we had him on the side of the stage or on the side next to the drums, behind a little percussion thing, so he could sing all his parts. And we just didn't feel the band is the band without the original members.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, sometimes you got to replace somebody for some reason, whatever. But I just, as a fan, whenever a band would change a member, it was never the same for me, no matter what band it was growing up. And there's some bands I was into, they changed one guy. It's not the same anymore. So it was important for us to be loyal to our drummer.
Yes.
And our friend who was with us for 30 years. So I think it's That's the way I look at it. I know not everyone's the same, and Mr. Big isn't Aerosmith by a long shot, but still, nevertheless, I think Aerosmith has more wherewithal, way more cash to be able to be able to
include him, yeah.
Have him fly out and at least get up for a couple songs or something.
Yes, does the same. Like Alan White can't play a whole set, but he comes out for a few songs, and they have another drummer carrying the show. Yeah.
Okay, well, let me ask you this: the last thing on this, because we got to talk about the record and the band and all that, but. Let me turn this to this way, just playing devil's advocate. So say the guy in this, or whatever the drummer is, is struggling, and you got a major TV live event like the Grammys, and the drummer doesn't want to share the moment or come off like that or stand there or not. And you're a musician with your ass on the line with that. You go for it, and if it's a train wreck, it's a train wreck, or... Then does that?
Well,
because I got a feeling that's where this is kind of.
You've seen them recently. I Joey seemed, maybe he's not the way he was when he was in his 20s and 30s, but he seemed like he was pulling his weight. I mean,
he hasn't played in a while.
But
it's been a few months.
We've seen this with Bill Ward not being allowed to do the Sabbath tour, and Peter Criss not being able to do a Kiss tour. So yeah, there's something to be said if somebody physically can't do it. But I think Joey's saying that he can
to get through a song or two.
Yeah.
You find that one song you can crush it. That's the.
And that's all Aerosmith is going to do if they have a big event. They're going to do Walk This Way or Dream On or whatever. You mean to tell me Joey can't play that?
Exactly.
I mean, there's got to be loyal. I think there's something to be said for loyalty to
nothing,
an original member.
Nothing is as simple as it seems from the outside when it's not your life. We don't know.
There's
so many more parameters to any situation.
Oh, yeah.
So
right.
We can't judge. We can't comment. We can't. We don't know.
That's true.
So
that's true. That's what I said earlier. Yeah.
Right. So whatever's going on with them, we just have to wish that they work it out in the best way.
Yeah.
That's all.
Ron's got incredible wisdom, whether it be toilet paper or humanity.
Or band drama.
Yeah.
They're one and the same. And
Bumble, are you the counselor? Would you say you're the counselor in Sons of Apollo? Do people come to you? You've got five guys in this band, yourself included.
I'm the youngest guy in the band, and I'm probably the most crotchety. The one that's like, it's too loud. I mean, even last night, I was like, I was ready to walk out of rehearsal because it was too loud for me. I'm not kidding. It's like, we got to lower down. We got to lower down.
And our tour manager that's doing the front of house says, Derek, it really wasn't that loud last night. He should hear what Ted Nugent sounds like.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because, Mike, what did I say to you the other day when I asked you who was doing front of house for you? And you told
me. Frank Mix is very loud.
And I said, Frank Mix is loud. Yeah. I said, you guys are going to be loud in every venue. So I actually,
well,
I actually know.
Already so loud. I mean, Derek is like, you know, he's proud to be the Yngwie of keyboards.
Proud to be loud. Yeah.
You know, that's like, you know, badge of honor for him.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So second album is out. Came out on Friday. Congrats.
2020.
2020 is out there. And loved the first record. Love what I've heard of this record. Already three videos from it that are out. So people have had a chance to sample it. But going into this, and I've read other interviews you guys have done, and Michael, I guess we'll start with you and go around the horn. The idea was the first record was so well received. It laid such a great footprint for the band. To kind of continue down that line. No, you don't have Bumble rapping or anything on this. It's pretty much staying in the same lane for the most part.
They tried to get a rap on the first, remember on the first record? It was like this rap thing, and then we were like sitting with it, and I go, wait a minute, we don't need this shuck and jive stuff on this record.
Well, funny, it was modeled after Steven Tyler. We're talking about a bit from the first
remember
album.
Remember? I laughed like, shim, sham, shimmy, shim, sham, shimmy. It's like, come on, man.
I liked it.
Yeah. I probably would have liked it.
Well, I don't know. Is that a question? I mean, if the question
was... Was going into making a second record. Was that the idea to kind of just do what you do, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when this first came out, everybody was like, oh, it's a super, you know, writing it off as some super group.
One and done.
One and done. And, right. But our intention all along was to be a real band and you know, do this for as long as we can. It was never supposed to be a one-off thing. It was always... And we treat it... And I've seen a lot of reviews for the new album, people saying, wow... It actually sounds like a new album from a real band. Yeah. It doesn't sound like something that was just put together with five guys.
We got them fooled.
Cash grab. It's a real band.
Derek, yeah. For you, or for the audience, if you can, for those that are not aware of Sons of Apollo, of course, now you know all the guys in it, the origins of this band, of course, you and Mike had history in Dream Theater together.
Yeah.
And you guys were the origins of how this thing was pulled together originally, right?
Right.
So it came together. Tell that story.
Well, I mean, we played together those in the early 90s, and then I was out of the band, and then we reconnected, what year for PSMS?
2011, right after I left Dream Theater.
Yeah, he was going to do a drum event at NAMM, and so he called me up and Tony McAlpine and Billy and said, hey, would you guys want to do some instrumental stuff? So we did the show, and people were like freaking out with the four of us together, and I said, Mike, I go, this is too good to not just... to just do NAMM shows. So we booked a little tour. Not a little tour. We actually booked like Europe.
European, full Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia.
We did some dates. I mean, we went out and played. And
no crew.
No crew. It was very cowboy style. It's like us schlepping the merch like through the hotels. It was pretty challenging.
And this was with Tony McAlpine.
Yeah. Right.
Who's opening for you on this tour coming up. Yeah.
That's right. With Tony McAlpine on guitar. And so we went and played. And I said, Mike, and we had fun. I go, dude. Come on, we got to go out there and go do this. He goes, oh, yeah, I'm doing all these bands. He goes, when time is right or whatever. So every NAMM show, every year I would send a picture to Mike of Dream Theater at the Grammys in their tuxedos. I go, whenever you're ready. And I would just keep taunting him and taunting him. Then finally he just goes, all right, Derek, are you ready? I go, let's fucking do it. Let's go.
And now you're doing it with the second record that's out right now. And you guys have...
And obviously, we obviously brought Jeff in and Bumblefoot in as well. Obviously.
Right. So where did Tony McAlpine? Tony got sick. So was that part of Tony?
No, not at all. Tony, we love Tony and we love playing with him. But when it came time to adding vocals and looking at what we were going to do with this, Bumblefoot and Mike felt very strong. And after like watching Ron, it was like it was very clear he belonged.
I mean,
we
love Tony. Yeah. But you know, Bumblefoot's a rock star. This band needed a real rock star and somebody that just like, you know,
a hard rock pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, and we love Tony. It's going to be great having him on tour with us
for the humor.
But the PSMS thing was more fusion instrumental oriented.
And you, Mike, you were telling me that some of the seeds of this working with Bumble was actually sewn with my...
Your 30th anniversary party.
Which was...
Yeah,
that was the Winery Dogs. The Winery Dogs were the house band, but... the Winery Dogs played, right. But then the house band for all of your guests and everything was me, Billy, and Bumblefoot.
Just 7 years ago already.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
That was the first... I mean...
But then we played before that.
Yeah, we, me, you, and Billy...
Oh, no, it was after it.
Me, you, and Billy did played at NAMM a few years before that.
We've done those NAMM jams. And, we all have connections. We did Prognation at Sea together. We all played together on that.
Right.
The four of us. You were missed, Jeff.
Yeah.
And
we missed you. I miss all the fun.
Let's see. When you produced Madame Mayhem's record, I laid
solos
on that.
Yeah, you can't lay a great solo.
Your son's first record, yeah, played on that. We did Metal Allegiance together.
Exactly.
So, like, we've all... We've done things together. Yeah. We've done things.
Things. For you, what was the... Coming into this, it was the for you timing wise with because you're all over the place too, man. You do your own thing, you play your own shows. You are you still doing Asia? Are you still in Asia?
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where we're not going to write songs together or do anything like that. We're just going to go out and just
play the hits.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You should know Ron is singing for Asia. I mean, playing guitar as well, but he's the lead singer. Yeah.
Pretty impressive. Pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it was fun to watch.
Ah, thank you.
How did you find your way into being the singer in Asia?
So that yeah,
well, see, John Whitten passed.
Well, yeah. It started. There was this band called Platinum Rock All Stars that Cole Palmer's manager put together, and it was Carmine on drums. It was Rudy Sarzo on bass. Jeff Downs was on keys, and he's the founding member of Asia, and he's in Yes, and. Phil Narrow, your singer in Dallas,
yeah,
was on vocals, and me and Gene Cornish from the Rascals.
Oh, wow. I love Gene. He's
wild.
Such a great guy. Yeah, and it was a blast. So we did a couple of shows together and everything. And after that, they asked if I would play guitar in Asia, and it was that was going to be 2017 when Sons of Apollo was just getting off the ground and getting revved up and doing everything. So I told them no. Like I'm busy with other things, and then in 2019 we were all doing our own stuff and just working on just getting ideas ready for this new album, and summer was free. They said, hey, you want to play guitar in it? I was like, sure, let's do it. They told me about the tour coming up. It's like Yes is headlining, Asia's direct support, John Lodge of Moody Blues is playing, and the whole night opens with Carl Palmer's ELP Legacy Band.
And I was supposed to play in that.
That's right.
Yeah. Play that.
Is that so, right? Wow.
Yeah. So I was like,
I was going to roadie for that one.
So, but then they had a singer for Asia, and the guy turns out he wasn't going to be able to do it. So the guy's like, Bumble, you could do this. Why don't you do it? So
there you were.
How many gigs have you done so far?
With them, we did a whole summer. I think it was 28 gigs, I think.
So you're still going to do it? I mean, when it fits with your schedule.
Yeah, if we do something, any kind of run this year, and it fits, and the juggling act and all the pieces fall into place, yeah.
Jeff, for you coming into this band, you were the guy that as Mike said and Derek said before, the sort of seeds of this band didn't even have a singer.
Right.
So then they reach out to you. You, of course, have other things you do as well. Soto and the other Trans-Siberian Orchestra, yeah, and all these things you got going on. So why was this the right thing for you to jump in on at this time?
In 2016, Soto opened for Winery Dogs in South America, and I would look over my shoulder and see Mike on the side of the stage watching the band, thinking, he digs the band. Of course, he was also friends with David Z, who was my bass player at the time. And I just thought Mike was just enjoying a few songs. I didn't realize he was actually checking me out, not in that way.
Scouting for you.
So I get a text from Mike on my birthday that year, November 2016. He said, happy birthday. I'm going to call you in a few days to tell you what your birthday present is. And I thought, wow, Portnoy's going to send me one of his old Tama kits that he's...
Gonorrhea.
And
I'm sure now you wish that was the case, right? Yeah.
So he called me up and he explained exactly that, that he was in the early stages where PSMS wanted to do another record and they wanted to put vocals on it. And I was the guy without any auditioning, without any, he just said, you're the guy if you so choose to accept. And without hesitation, I said yes, because I've always wanted to work with Mike. I've always wanted to work with Billy. I've known Billy 30 some odd years now, and the opportunity to work with these guys was it was a no-brainer. So before I even knew what the music would sound like, or before it even evolved into Sons of Apollo, I said an absolute yes.
And Billy, for you, of course, you and Mike were doing the Winery Dogs together. You guys have done a ton of stuff, obviously, ton of different bands. What was the, I'm trying to think about this, what was the very first time you played with Portnoy? What was the very
Rush,
first thing?
The Rush tribute album we did on Shrapnel Records.
95, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just, I think we did two or three songs.
Five or six, actually.
Oh, okay.
But that was the first time we played together. But yeah. I had been seeing Billy with Talis since I was a teenager.
Yeah, I posted the photo of Mike wearing his Talis shirt to the first Dream
Theater. The very first photo of myself, John Petrucci, and John Myung, I'm wearing a Talis shirt.
Now, wait a minute. Going back to Talis a second. Didn't Talis...
I was going
to
say that.
Talis opened for Yngwie because I was at that show.
With Jeff Singing.
With Jeff Singing.
Yeah, I was there, too.
It's and crazy. David Lee Roth was there, too.
Yeah, he
getting ready to...
So, wait. David Lee Roth was at that show scouting Billy for the DLR band, for the Eat 'Em and Smile
the cornucopia.
And did you guys... Jeff and Billy, did you guys connect on that night, or did you know each
friends,
other before?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
even back then, you guys knew each other.
Well, that was the first we'd met, but I was friends with Johnny Angel and Phil Nero and Mark Miller. Everybody was all tight with Talis. Yeah. You know, we were all hanging out days off and the whole thing.
A great time on that tour. It was amazing. Yeah.
So bringing that all full circle, you just announced the other day that you've got you're going to do a new Talis record.
Yes. Metal Blade's going to do a deal with us, and we're all set to go. Mark Miller's going to play drums, Phil Nero on vocals, me on bass. We're going to try and bring as many of the guitar players in, Johnny Angel and Mitch Perry, along with the gentleman Kiri we're using now for the live shows. Last summer we opened up for Cheap Trick and had an amazing night in Rochester together. We've done a bunch of live shows at the Iridium in New York City last year. So,
can I ask a question? I haven't even asked you this.
Sure.
So are you going to do all those old Talis songs that never got put out, like Power to Break Away and had well, some of them you ended up using with Mr. Big, but there's a whole, I have like bootlegs of that Talis lineup, which was my favorite lineup. Mark Miller is just one of my favorite drummers.
But there was all these
great songs that they never recorded. So you're
going to
use
that's the idea.
Some?
We're going to record all those things that we never got to.
Awesome.
And Mark Miller is playing as good or better than ever.
He's so great.
He hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah, I love him.
He's great.
If I could share a fanboy moment, my very first rock concert I ever went to was Van Halen 1980, Women and Children First Tour, Oakland Coliseum. Talis was the opening band, Billy Sheehan.
You see how
first rock concert. And then when I went to, when I got my scholarship to Berklee College of Music in 83, Yngwie was like the hugest thing. 84, I'm sorry. 83, 84. And Yngwie was like the hugest thing. Every kid in school was like into it. Jeff Scott Soto, singer.
And Dream Theater's very first live show ever, we were called Majesty then in 86. The very first song we ever played live on stage together was I'll See the Light Tonight. And also in that set was The Farandole by Talis.
Jeff, how old are you, Jeff? You're everybody's first.
I just turned 82.
I know. Sounds that way.
I just turned 54. So
we all have a Talis story.
We all have a Talis story.
Good friend of mine, Frankie Italiano, great bass player, wonderful guy. His older brother, Sal, who played in Cities with AJ.
He's in Anvil now, isn't he?
Yeah, he was doing Anvil. I don't know. Is he still in Anvil?
And he plays bass in that Maiden tribute band as well, right?
Oh, Frankie?
I think Sal. I think.
Not sure.
Anyway.
But, yeah, so
I
Sal
digest.
Used to digest the Panda Express. So Sal used to cut my hair, and I would go to this place called Rock and Roll Heaven on weekends.
Oh, I went there.
Yeah. And who ran it? John and Marsha.
Yeah.
Zazula.
Yeah. The Zazulas. So between Sal and John and Marsha, as a young kid, I would always get turned on to all this great new metal coming out. I remember, in fact, John and Marsha were the ones that gave me my first copy. They're like, you got to check this band out. They just put out this album, Metal on Metal. Metal on metal is what I crave.
Of course.
And Angel Witch and like all this great stuff. I would get all my like Australian imports, AC/DC and everything there. And Sally's like, you got to check this band out, Talis. And I was a kid, and when I heard NV4, I just spent days dropping the needle and just learning it on guitar and everything.
You know it better than I do now.
Billy, does it make you like all this Talis love from other musicians and the opportunities you had so early on? It must be head scratching that the band didn't really break. You know. Outside of the Buffalo, area, of course. I know you guys were huge up there, but
just as the band was catching a little bit of heat, that's when I got the call from Dave, and I always said I would never leave my band unless Van Halen called me and asked me to join. And I said, it's David Lee Roth. I go, close enough.
Let me just say this, and this is me saying it right now. I think there's a lot of people that wish that Billy got a call from Dave along with Steve Vai and Greg Bissonette right now, because it would be awesome to see that.
Yeah.
No, your phone didn't ring for this one, huh?
We're glad.
That's a heartbreaking story, ain't it?
But you did. Nobody got a call, obviously.
No.
So it's not like somebody got a call and said, "No, I don't want to do this."
No, we didn't.
The phone didn't ring.
The boss is doing his own thing.
Hopefully, there's time. Maybe. I mean, we'll see.
Who knows?
But some things are best left to some things are best left to memory.
Yeah, sure too.
But my fanboy moment.
Somebody's gonna go there.
When they did the tour last year, Billy having come out and do a couple of songs and getting to play Shy Boy with you and all the other ones and everything.
Ron was kind enough to come out. We were our ticket sales were a little low in New York City. Can you
so brought me out. They got lower.
Hey, let's get Bumblefoot.
you brought in Bumblefoot and people started returning the ones that bought them already.
You motherfucker. So
we sold four
more
tickets.
This guy with the toilet paper website. We don't want to go see him play guitar. This is a lunatic over here.
TPFail.com. Check it out.
Hey, we got to take a break. We should come back and talk a little bit about Sons of Apollo before we run out of time. We talked about everything else from toilet paper to other bands.
Toilet paper to tell us. Right? That's what you're going to say.
I always thought
that's maybe the name of the record, Billy.
I always thought it would be good. Talis with opening act, Stevie Salas.
Talis and Salas. Yeah, that would work.
Another good one would be Rolling Stones and Sticks. The Sticks and Stones would be a natural story.
Yeah, work too. Oh. All right, let's go to break. We'll come back. We've got about a half an hour left to go on the show, so let's talk a little bit about Sons of Apollo, the record, the tour that's coming up. The new album, 2020, is in stores now. The tour starts on Thursday. Tony McAlpine does open, so that's cool as well. We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Sons of Apollo after this.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, if you are a Survivor fan, then you got to check out Rob has a podcast hosted by Survivor competitor Rob Cesternino. Every week he'll be recapping the upcoming season of Survivor so you don't miss any of the action. Plus, Rob is celebrating his 10th year of podcasting, so you know he's a total pro. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Podcast One, and many of your favorite podcast listening apps.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's get back to more of my conversation with Sons of Apollo on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So tell me when the tour starts Thursday. Give the rundown on the dates. You start in, is it Sacramento?
Sacramento, yeah.
Sacramento.
We got four California shows, Sacramento, Pomona, Hollywood, and San Francisco. And then we start heading east. And Salt Lake City,
Denver,
Chicago, Battle Creek, Canada.
Toronto, Montreal, and then we come down to Boston, New York, Jim Thorpe,
New Jersey, PA,
and then Bergen Jersey. Pack, yeah. Jersey.
And there's the website, just sonsofapollo.com?
Yeah.
So people listening, wherever you're listening, if you want to find out if there's a date near you, go to sonsofapollo.com.
And any of our personal socials, of course.
Yeah, so going into this now, first album came out and you toured for it, and of course it's one record, so you filled it out by doing some other stuff, whether it be a Dream Theater song or some covers. The cover set was unbelievable that you did at the show that came out on DVD. So now you got two albums of material to play, including a song on this new record that's about 17 minutes long. I don't know if you're going to do that live.
Yep,
the ballad.
But
everything.
So what are you going to do? You're going to just play? You're going to play the two, both records? You're going to play them in full?
Almost. We'll do the whole new album. One song may come and go from show to show, and then almost the whole first album. So all Sons of Apollo show.
Yeah. Okay. So now going forward, no covers anymore.
There's no need. I mean, it was really only just to fill out the set last time around. Now we have with two albums. We're grown men now.
I mean, every band's done. I mean, I'm sure Mr. Big did it. Winery Dogs did it.
Yeah, Flying Colors.
Covers are fun, though. Yeah. Covers are fun.
And I was going to say, you guys put a lot into doing them.
You know, a lot of times when a band does a cover, it gives you a sense of what inspired them, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, the first time around, we were doing a lot of Van Halen stuff, a lot of Queen references. Yeah. So yeah.
Which we found out. So you guys put out that DVD of that show. Where was that? In Greece or Bulgaria?
No, Bulgaria.
Bulgaria, right?
Close.
It's fantastic. It's shot brilliantly. It sounds great. You guys play great. You've got that whole. It's a great package. You've got the DVD, the Blu-ray, you've the CD audio, everything.
Mike chose all the songs.
So mm-hmm. so, but here's what's great. And I was joking with Mike about this the other day. The one biggest takeaway from me, because I already knew you guys were great musicians and I knew the songs and all yada, yada, yada. The biggest reveal for me in that whole concert, Jeff, is that people in Bulgaria don't know Van Halen songs.
We learned that the hard way.
Because you're in the audience singing In the Cradle Will Rock and you're sticking the mic in their face and they're like frozen up.
The best part is I didn't even think that we were filming. You don't know this one. I say it on the
you
mic.
You actually say it on the mic. Like, oh, you don't know it. And you walk away. It's hysterical. And I had always heard that Van Halen is way more of an American sure. thing and not really that revered outside of the U.S. But man, I was just like, you're out there with your dick swinging in the wind, man, because you're trying to get people to sing Van Halen songs. You're running. Jeff is literally running through the venue, going up to people. He's in the audience
couldn't
at this
find
point.
One remember,
and he couldn't find one person that knew "And the Cradle Will Rock."
I was more worried about falling. Rock. I have a size 14 foot, and the steps. It's an old archaeological. Whatever.
Ancient Rome.
Yeah. They haven't fixed the steps.
They're very
the
small
steps
feet
are literally
back
then. Like maybe 4 or 5 inches. So I'm like just, I knew I was going to eat shit. I knew something was going to happen. So I had to be more cognizant of that than actually finding somebody who knows the song.
Did you know in advance that you were going to go and do an audience participation in the crowd? That was planned.
They told our tour manager told me not to, based on how steep it was and how I said
and how few people knew Van Halen in Bulgaria.
I was spilling beer all over everybody. It didn't matter.
And you found your wife and gave her a kiss right in the middle of it all. That's awesome.
Is that right? She was in the audience.
Her and her mom were there, and I have a lot of friends out in Bulgaria because I'm married to a Bulgarian woman, and. And so, yeah, it was kind of a hometown show for me in a sense.
Wow,
it's really cool.
I know it's early going with this band, but what would you each say would be has been the highlight so far? A moment or a show or is
it... For me, it was that particular show. Actually, I'm so glad we caught it on DVD because it was just one of those nights where all the stars were aligned. It was a beautiful venue. We were playing with an orchestra and a choir. We were doing this really cool cover set. So yeah, for me that show was not only the highlight of this band, one of the highlights of my career, actually.
Wow.
Sure.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a great show. It's,
yeah, same.
I can't really add more.
I think
it
goes the same way for all of us.
I like the catering in Toronto. I thought it was really good.
It was quite nice.
Yeah. You like the toilet paper in Cleveland.
What's plenty of Tim Hortons also.
Yeah, good coffee.
So so that's the plan going out, and the dates are out there on sonsofapollo.com. And
VIP packages also available.
Okay.
For anyone that's interested in
now,
the
those,
intimate.
Shameless
now,
plug.
Those VIPs. No, for real. Like, I think, you know, it's not just, we're not just doing that assembly line. How you doing? Sign a thing. Get the hell out of here.
Like
VIPs
we did last
get
year.
A bad rap.
Well, yeah. And you know what? It's fans deserve more. They deserve
Absolutely.
An experience. And we thought about it for this tour. It was like, what more can we do to give them something that they can remember, something
exactly.
special?
Make it
so,
worth their talk.
Yeah. So now we're going to play songs that we're not playing in the show for them. We'll do a Q&A. Like, it's going to be more of like a hang.
Oh, so like a whole pre-show thing.
Like private performance, pretty much.
An Apollonian experience.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great because, you know, the whole VIP package deals are huge deals now. Everybody's doing them. Most people are doing them. And I get a lot of calls from the audience here that'll tell me that, and I'm not surprised that they're basically, especially the bigger bands, it's like cattle. You're moved through, fist bump if you're lucky, and go to our website, download the picture, and thanks for your $1,000.
Well, you know what, Ed, I don't want to stir, I'm sorry, I don't mean want to stir things up because that's
sure
really not my style.
Shit's
but a lot of people like to give Kiss a lot of flack saying, you know, they were the first to pioneer the meet and greets, and everyone's saying, that's greedy, how can you do that to the fans, and blah, 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 blah. Isn't it amazing how a year later, not only does every rock band do it, but country bands, hip-hop artists, they set the standard for the thing. So I want to thank Gene and Paul for paving the way for us
for you to
for all
VIPs.
These bands to have and have this format for the fans.
But now
the
also,
VIPs.
There's a few other things to consider. One is that if fans value getting a more personal experience with the band, like face-to-face stuff, which they couldn't do before ever, I mean, that's a good thing. And if people didn't want it, they wouldn't go and they wouldn't do it. And it does take, you know, you're spending, the band spends money that they have to make back to you know, make up the special swag and all that stuff and all that thing. So, sadly, you know, there is an economical factor to it, or an economic factor. But also, for a lot of smaller bands, this is the only thing that keeps them afloat. It's not easy for bands to do what they do anymore.
I've said that all the time on the air.
So, really, you know, the bands are so grateful for the fans that come and do these VIP things, because that's the only thing that keeps them surviving is the merch and VIP stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, speaking on behalf of the whole entire damn, you know, band world.
Yeah.
Bands are very grateful.
It can mean the difference between touring and not touring. Absolutely. If you're on the list, right?
It absolutely does. Yeah. And the thing is, and
it's not just a money grab. It truly is not. It goes full
circle. Not at the level this band is at. Right. But being honest, at the level of Kiss is at. I mean, they don't need the money to tour.
But the reason, though, I think it needs to be said, the reason why the meet and greets became came out of necessity, because everyone was downloading all the music, and all of a sudden album sales are not an income stream anymore. Fans, I read, they complain about how can it's not cool that they're charging. It's like, you know what? We'll forego the meet and greets if everyone pays for the record.
Oh, you're paying $10 a month to have any music you
want. We'll trade. If we go back to the old normal fair thing, then we'll...
There's no money. Nobody makes money off the album sales.
Advances, the
concert guarantees, and you got to realize that there's overhead to go on tour. There's a lot of expenses to make a tour happen.
Right.
So the meet and greets are really a necessity for a lot of people. It's the only way you can actually tour anymore.
Right, at the level you guys are at, but when you get to the Arena Stadium acts, that's more of a, hey, we're going to make more money.
You know
we're
what?
I have no problem with it. I'm just saying that's what it's about.
I want to add is that sometimes the meet and greet is the only chance a band has to meet their fans, because your schedule is so regimented, and you're just getting in the morning, you're doing everything, you're doing your press, and you're doing
this, but on the other side,
and then you roll out, it is the only chance that you get to say hi.
But for the fans, if I was, when I was a kid, if I had the opportunity to meet Rush or meet Kiss, or, you know, that never existed.
Some deep pockets.
Yeah.
But there's just no time.
You'd find the way to do it. I would have found a way to meet Eddie Van Halen at
growing up in the New York, New Jersey area where I still live, I mean, we used to find ways to do it by finding out what hotel they were at, or hang out on 48th Street, and, oh, they're going to go into Manny's, and we're going to wait outside. So people always, throughout history, you found ways. Now it's structured and monetized.
Right, but at the time, Ed, though, when you were a kid, whatever your favorite, like Van Halen, if you had the opportunity to spend $250 or $500 or whatever it was to have, not only just to hang outside of Manny's and see how that's Ed Van Halen, but to have do a photo, be able to have a couple conversations, watch a sound check. I mean, I would have jumped all over that.
It is a mutual time that everybody's in agreement that we get to just not do anything else. This is our time to meet each other. Like, that's what that is.
Well, that's, you're handling it and going about it the right way, and which is the way to do it.
The one thing is, like, that assembly line shit, not cool. Like, the fans should never feel like they're a burden. Yeah. Like they're a pain in the ass and infringing on the band's time.
But that's the huge majority of them, if we're being honest. They really
that's
are. Right. So
that's why we're doing something
doing
different.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah. So go to sonsofapollo.com. You can learn about the VIPs. You can learn about the dates. The album 2020 is out now. You can pick it up wherever you get your music. There's all the musicianship you want and all the cool playing, but it always comes back to melody and a song and a hook.
You got it.
And Billy's shaking his head, because that's important, right?
I do clinics and tell young players, you know, if you want to be successful in music, get in a band, first of all. Don't sit in your bedroom and make YouTube videos. Get in a band with songs, and get in a band with songs that you sing. And it's never failed anyone. Paul McCartney, it worked out for him, I guess.
Yeah, there's so many times you see these amazing musicians and these amazing players and these really, really young people, like, you know, and I'm just like, that's all great, but learn the craft of writing great songs. That's the real intangible,
exactly,
I think.
Right.
It really is.
I couldn't agree more.
Speaking of great songs, there is the current single and video from the Sons of Apollo album, which is called Desolate July, is a beautiful tribute to a guy we were all friends with and that tragically died in an accident on the road. Of course, Jeff, you were in Trans-Siberian Orchestra, he was in the other touring version of
it. East Band, yeah.
Yeah, but we're talking about David Z, who I knew and met back with his brother in a band called ZO2 when I first met him. When I first met him, they were doing a Kiss tribute and then became ZO2, and then those guys are all very talented, went on to do other things. I remember very clearly hanging with David on one of the Monsters of Rock cruises and him telling me that he was about to play in Adrenaline Mob and was really excited about it. And, of course, that's the band he was on tour with when that their vehicle was struck and he was tragically killed. But I thought it was really, really touching and very, very classy for you guys to have dedicated a song and the video, which I urge everybody to check out, which is out there right now, with images of him and really a nice tribute. Whose idea was that? I mean, I know you guys all knew him. I believe you all knew him, but how did that?
Well, two things about that before we move on. Obviously, Mike knew David very well. He actually knew him before I knew him and knew him a lot longer. So he had that relationship already with David. But as far as, I mean, the video is concerned and the song itself, when I first heard the piece of music, it sounded so haunting. It basically took me there. I heard the entire song finally when I was in lyric writing mode, and Derek and I had already sat together and came up with the bulk of the melodies and everything. But lyrically, it just kind of came to me. Sometimes I have to think about them. Sometimes I'm in a mind funk and trying to come up with words. But this one just came to me based on how haunting the song itself sounded. And even the church bells in the beginning kind of sound like a funeral procession. It seemed like the obvious thing to do. And I wanted a platform that everybody in this band who knew David could actually pay respects to him and tribute to him, because he was such a great person.
Wonderful, wonderful guy. And I thought it was so nice that you did that. And, you know, I saw his brother the other day at the jam in NAMM, Paulie, and we were talking a little bit. And I said, I'm assuming you saw and heard that. And he said, I'm so honored and grateful that those guys did that. He said, because I still haven't dealt with it. Yeah. And to see somebody else come out and deal with it is going to help me sort of heal and take that next step. So I thought that was really an amazing thing. One of the many amazing moments on the new Sons of Apollo album. Thanks. 2020, which is out there right now. So let's go around the horn. We got about 4 or 5 minutes before we have to end right to the second. So starting with you, Mike, anything else you want to mention, anything you want to plug, anything you want to say, whether it's this band or anything else you have coming out? I know a Bumblefoot's got a hot sauce. He's just dying to plug. And we're going to get to you in a second.
I got sauce for you.
He's got sauce.
You
He's
want
got toilet
sauce?
Paper.
I got sauce.
You know what? The sauce and toilet paper thing work well together.
Oh, if you really think about it.
There's a tie in there, Bumble.
There's no toilet paper can handle his sauce.
Mike, anything else coming up that you want to mention?
Well, obviously, right now the focus for all of us, but myself included, is Sons of Apollo, the new album, the touring that we're about to do, America, Europe, South America. Beyond that, I have a live Flying Colors release that'll be out this year, a live Neil Morse Band release that's coming out. I just did a covers album with Bobby Blitz and Phil Demmel and Mark Menge. Also, I'm working on a new transatlantic album as well. And then I have one other cool album that's coming out that hasn't been announced yet. But yeah,
Mike has 75 things coming up. And he'll be on the cruise to the edge with Flying Colors.
I'll be on there with Flying Colors,
All right, cool. Derek, what else?
Right now, total Sons of Apollo mode, but as soon as we finish this tour, I signed a new solo deal with Sony for an instrumental record.
Nice.
That's going to be with co-written and produced with Simon Phillips on drums.
Wow.
Joe Bonamassa, guest star Kiko from Megadeth, Zach Wilde's going to play on a track. Hopefully, Mr. Billy Sheehan will join us on the track with Zach. And then a couple other guest stars that I'll reveal later, but it's going to be...
I won't be singing on it.
Very, very exciting.
I wasn't invited.
Well, can you...
Instrumental,
can
right?
Can you,
instrumental.
Derek Sherinian...
One song with vocals with Joe Bonamassa singing.
Can you, Derek Sherinian, a man that has some history with this guy, can you be the one that brings John Sykes back to the world? Can you
I have
do
tried.
It? And we've all tried.
You know, I've loved John, and we connected like when I did that tour, the Blue Murder tour in Japan, and every year I check
Live,
in with him
record.
Out of... I know you love
that record.
Record.
Yeah.
But I love John, and I think he's super talent. And every year I call him just to check in and go, what's up, man? And I'm like, do you want to do something? In fact, when Joe Bonamassa left Black Country Communion, Jason and Glenn and I are going, well, what are we going to do? We can't just have some ham and egger come in. We need to have a name guy to fill this void.
Sykes would have been perfect.
And the first person was, I go, we got to get Sykes in here. And both Glenn and Jason go, oh no, we know John, and you know it's John is John. And I go, let me try and work this deal. So I call John. I go, John, here's the thing. we got this. You could step right in. We renamed the band, and we could fucking take off. And he'll go, I just don't want to join someone else's band.
Oh, God.
And I'm all, John, it'll be a fresh thing, and this is the fucking lineup. I go, we could fucking take over the role. He's all, oh, I don't know. I'm doing my solo record. And I'm all, Jesus, I go, you've been doing that for the last two presidential terms. Let's do a fucking
90 seconds. Bumble, you got a new hot sauce coming?
Bumblefoothotsauce.com.
There you go.
Bumblefucked. Be careful.
And
award-winning gourmet premium hot sauces, they will be on tour with Sons of Apollo.
Gave my daughter a nosebleed.
Yes. It's true. The Bumblefuck. The hottest one is called Bumblefucked. And it's so hot, it caused his family to bleed out.
What an endorsement. Jeff?
Just finished vocals on my next solo record, coming on Frontiers Records. I'm going to be doing another wet record with Frontiers Records sometime in between the tours. And it's a Sons of Apollo year in between all that.
And Billy?
Sons of Apollo and a new Talos record.
I mean, you're going to start working on that soon, huh?
Yes, sir. Very, very soon.
Very, very cool. Well, thanks to the guys in Sons of Apollo for coming in. You know, my radio show, Pacific Time Live, starts at 11 a.m., which for many people, including myself, as ridiculous as it sounds, is kind of early. So good to have those guys come in and brave the L.A. traffic and join me in the studio. Check out the new album 2020 out there right now, as they continue to tour around the world in support of it as well. And remember, follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk for all the updates on Twitter, where I am most active. Also put a fair amount up there on Instagram. I don't do too much on Facebook, but there is a fan page I post on occasionally. And be sure to check out EddieTrunk.com on the homepage for all my appearances. Thanks to Katie Irizarry. She's the producer of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, and I'll see you next Thursday for another all-new episode, Podcast One, Apple Podcast, or now via Spotify. Be sure to check it out and listen and subscribe, and thank you for doing so. Have a great week.
Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream is a total chocolate game changer. We start with unbelievably creamy dark chocolate ice cream. Then we add different chocolate treats, like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, or chocolate brownies, to make four decadent chocolate flavors. Because sometimes the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.